Anna.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm sorry,
you're
I
the
have
first.
Company, but oh, I am okay. Because I had my son was here and he's still here, but I excused myself, so
understand. You wanna wait a few more minutes or you wanna go start?
Let's see. What are we in minutes? Well, 4 minutes have gone by, so I guess let's go ahead and start, even if we just do one verse.
Okay. Did you want to finish with section 23, or do you go on to 24?
I felt like go on to 24, unless you have any other, you know, comments that you feel like maybe we missed.
No, only if there was a question, would I need to go back to it. So section 24 starts with verse 232. And I'll start with the L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud kud shabarichu ishkin tehid hilu urhimud hilu urhilu urhimud. L'yakda l'shem yud hei bavad hei. Yehuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah Lasok Torah Mitzvah Vayehino Amadunai Elohino Aleinu Maaseh Yadenu Kanernei Aleinu Maaseh Yadenu Kanernehu Vatach Liamar Elohim Al Dami Lach Al Techerach Vial Tishkot El Dahu Idaruta Deal tata, begin the shalta. Amar David Elohim, al de damila, beatara lega beila, ulit chavara tabe yamina. The translation. He opened the discussion with the verse, keep not your silence, Elohim. Do not hold your peace and be still, El. This represents the awakening from below, from the Nukva, to take control. David responded, keep not your silence, Elohim, from arousing your desire to the upper Zerantin and to cling on to the right, to his chesed. My commentary. This pasuk is describing the process that is the cause of Mayim Nukvim, the female waters. This is my opinion. Questions, comments, thoughts?
Well, is the he David, meaning King David?
King Solomon.
Did I get disconnected?
No, I was away from the phone. It's King Solomon.
Oh, okay. Okay, King Solomon is the who? I mean, who is he?
Actually, let me rephrase that. You were asking who is talking in the verse when it says he opened the discussion. So
right, and then it mentions David repeating the same thing. So
right, but it's talking about, it says he opens the discussion with the verse, so it's referring to whoever was speaking in the last section.
Oh.
And I think that was Elazar. But we'd have to look. Actually, I think I have it open. Let me see.
I have the text.
Let me see who is speaking. The last person was Rabbi Yitzhak.
Okay, in 230. Okay.
In 230. Right.
Says Rabbi Isaac.
No, in 231, it's Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Elazar is speaking.
Right, second sentence, right. Rabbi Elazar said, okay.
Right. So Rabbi Elazar is the he in verse 232.
Okay. Well, it sounds like they're waiting for the shepherd to come down. He's already made the voice request.
Right.
Which is the nukva and the female waters. And so he just hasn't been answered yet, or he hadn't received the shepherd yet. So he's, why are you keeping silence, Elohim?
Right.
Okay.
So verse 233.
Okay.
Mata ma begin ki hineo yevecha yechemayun wikomer ki noatu lev yachtav alecha berit ki ikroto ugin kat Elohim al damila Liata ra lega be e la de hakadem. Itarat yamina uktirat la bahada. Wakadit kashrat yamina kadem itvar sanin diktiv. Yamin ha hashem ne dari. Lakoach yamin ha Hashem tirat soyev. The translation, we're on verse 233 in section 24. For what reason? Because for lo, your enemies make a tumult, for they have consulted together with one consent. They make a covenant against you. The nukva is the aspect of the left, which is the secret of chachma without chasadim. And chachma cannot shine without chasadim. Therefore, all the klipot and the enemies of the holiness raise up their heads. Hence, keep not your silence, Elohim, from awakening toward the upper Zerantin. Because then the right of Zerantin is aroused and attaches her to himself. When she is attached to the right, namely when the Hakma in her is enclosed by the Hasadim of the right, then the enemies are defeated, because the illumination of Hakma destroys all the enemies of the holiness. As it is written, your right hand, Hashem, has become glorious in power. Your right hand, Hashem, has dashed the enemy in pieces. My commentary. With Rabbi Ashlag's comments, the pasuk is clear as written. Contemplate this information and determine how to determine if Hakma is enclosed by Chasadim. Questions, comments. Thoughts?
Well, my first thought as you were reading, it made me wonder if our actions, if they're negative actions, that's what brings the enemies or the chaos, which prevents the flow of the Sephirot to get your answer, you know. Where they're using the term keep not your silence. In other words, Elohim is not silent anymore. You begin, you know, the Sephirot begins to move down and you begin to get your, I don't know how to put it in words.
The
why were the enemies there? I guess that's what would make it a simple question.
Well, what was the enemy?
The ego. The Satan.
The ego or the Satan, whichever, if you're looking at the general or the specific. But the...
Right.
So, that's why the enemy is there. When Malchut always has Chachma within it. But when it's in a frame of judgment, the Chachma is not veiled by the Chasadim. And therefore, the Chachma cannot be recognized, can't be ascertained. And Malchut moves to connect to the left column. The left column is flowing through your soul. But there's no Chasadim coming down at the same time to clothe the wisdom.
Okay.
So when there is Chasadim, the Chachma becomes enclosed, and the Malchut moves into the central column. And this is what the verses are generally describing, but they're a little esoteric, because we haven't defined all the code words within them.
Well, had we had the statement that the nukah is the aspect of, I know the aspect of the left, but the idea that it's the secret of Chachma without chesed. I don't think I ever connected that before.
Well, in order to reveal any spiritual item, you have to have a vessel covering it, correct?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, Chachma is a spiritual item. How can we perceive Chachma in the frame of Malchut? Only when it's veiled in something, and Chachma always gets veiled in Chasadim.
Okay.
Should I go on or should I stay with this?
I was just kind of trying to reread again.
Reread it, that's fine, we'll wait.
Mm-hmm.
I believe a couple of other people have come on that didn't identify themselves because we were talking, so.
Okay, well, they can identify themselves. Okay, well, let's go on.
Malka.
Hello, Brandy and Malka.
Hello.
So we're going on to verse 234 in section 24. B'sha ha'tse b'sha ha'tse b'sha ha'tse Koi nun malkin liagacha b'kirava aleya di Avraham Ich ya'atu li'avara leya min alma B'ke wan d'shal tu bilot Barachu cha avi Avraham miyad azalu Diti v'yayikhu et lot v'et rekusho ben ahi Avram v'yelechu Memtet begin did yokneya delot hawa dame le Avram Ugin kach Vayelehu. Rekol ha'u derava v'gimeya ha'wa. The translation, so come and behold, when all those kings joined to make war against Abraham, they consulted one another about how to destroy him. But as soon as they took control over Lot, Abraham's nephew, they immediately left, as it is written. And they took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, and his possessions, and departed. What was the reason? Lot's image was similar to that of Abraham. As a result, they departed, as they believed they had captured Abraham, which was the purpose of the war. My commentary. With Rabbi Ashlag's comments, the pasuk is clear as written. Have you considered what spiritual reason Lot looks like Abraham? What's the reason? When he is a nephew, not a son. The Zohar answers this question, why Abraham went to war to rescue Lot, by reminding us that Lot represents metaphorically Abraham's evil inclination. And this fact answers both of our questions. Questions, comments, thoughts.
Well, I thought it was clear as written, especially since we talked about previously, one day last week, about Lot and Abraham looking for Lot. And the kings thought that they had actually captured Abraham.
Right. But why didn't they kill him outright?
Why didn't they kill him outright? Is that what you said?
Yeah, why capture? They're taking all his wealth with them. Why not kill him? What was the reason they captured him?
I don't know, you'll have to tell me.
Well, the main reason on a physical level is they needed to take him back to prove to the people that he had influenced about one God, and that's the reason that they wanted Abraham dead, basically, was because he had convinced people not to follow their gods.
Oh, okay.
And so they needed to demonstrate by dragging him through the population to show that they could overpower him. Otherwise, they would be making a martyr out of him.
Okay.
By killing him when nobody could see it. Now, that's the physical reason. The spiritual reason, I've never heard a reason, and I'm not sure that it really applies, because when you're dealing with people who are not spiritual, they don't really look for spiritual causes. They accept the physical causes as justification.
Well, I was trying to see if there was a connection between the two verses that we had before. Why was all of a sudden Abraham and Lot here? So I was pondering that, but it evidently is starting
a new
idea. Mm-hmm. So when I see that the chapter is it's just got two more verses, so it's a short chapter.
Yeah, it's very short.
Mm-hmm. Oh, look at the next question. The next verse, it's going to give us the answer that you, I bet that you just told. Okay.
235. And now you found out my secret.
Oh, and I'm still looking backwards.
Verse 235. Matama begin dahawa Avraham ape Bene alma mi pulchana Nukra avia ela elo Pufulachana de kuchabarihu Watu kuchabarihu Atar lone bi alma Begin legaut gadla Shema di Avraham di alma Ukar valeya lefulchaneya. The translation. And he asks, why did they want to kill Abraham? And he answers, because Abraham took people of this world away from idolatry and brought them to worship the Holy One, blessed be he. This is why they wanted to kill him. In addition, it was the Holy One, blessed be he, who incited them to fight Abraham, so that Abraham would be brought closer to his way of worship, and the name of Abraham would become glorified throughout the world. My commentary. With Rabbi Ashlag's comments, the section is clear as written. It was Hashem's protection of Lot, Abraham's evil inclination, that is important to contemplate. The answer is expressed in this pasuk, yet is not another way that Abraham would become glorified throughout the world. Questions, comments, thoughts?
And I remember how Abraham wanted to go and rescue Lot, so it's an amazing God. It makes you see that the things that happen to you are for a purpose.
Absolutely. Nothing happens without a purpose. There is no such thing as coincidence. And, you know, I mean, it sounds silly, but looking out your window, you see a leaf blowing in the wind. The reason that you're looking at that leaf is that there's a reason for it. A reason that's a message to you from somewhere. From Hashem, ultimately, but one of the Sephirot. We just don't pay attention to all these little details that come into our lives and it would give us perception if we would just open our eyes, open our minds. I'm going to read.
You know, when.
Go ahead.
You know, when people pay attention to all the things that you're talking about, then most of the people that don't pay attention think that person is weird.
Does that matter? You're absolutely correct. But I will tell you a story. It's a long story, and we may not have time to finish it, but I'll try and do it quickly. There was a Kabbalist who worked in a mental institution. And he became friendly with a psychiatrist who worked in the institution and had been there for 30 years. And the psychiatrist told him the story about his 30-year anniversary vacation that he took with his wife. And he had been working with a schizophrenic for 30 years. They became, you know, you talk to somebody for 30 years, you're going to get to know all the stories, all the life stories. So he was very, you know, he told his patient he would miss him next week because he was going on vacation, and he described that he was going to Acapulco on the plane, and he had planned it with, you know, all the trimmings and with the penthouse suite, presidential suite, and the, you know, all the extras that were going, you know, the special cars that were going to pick him up, and all of those things that, you know, that enhance a trip. So the morning came, but unfortunately it was raining, and so the limo that was picking him up was late. And so they missed that flight. And then they had to go on the next flight. And when they got into Acapulco, the airport, it was the last flight in, and it was 3 hours late. So the airport was really closed. There were no cabs to take him anywhere. They had to wait till 7 in the morning when the cab showed up and to take him to the hotel. And when they got to the hotel, the desk clerk explained that their room had been given away because they hadn't arrived, and the only room they had left was a very small room right near the elevator where all the noise was. But what could they do? You know, they had to take the room. And then the next day, they went out fishing, sport fishing, and they got sunburned so miserably that the whole week they had to stay in the apartment in the small room. So when he got back to the city, to the insane asylum, and there was this time for the session with the schizophrenic. The schizophrenic asked him how his vacation was, and his answer was a vacation from hell. And the schizophrenic said, "I'm really sorry, but while you were gone, I had the most wonderful vacation ever. The limousine came to the door. They rolled down the red carpet. I walked down this red carpet down the steps of the insane asylum. I was whisked to the airport. It was a beautiful airplane and trip. I was the only one on the plane. I had all that champagne to myself. When I got to Acapulco, the limousine, it wasn't even a cab, the limousine picked me up and took me to the hotel where they upgraded me to the presidential suite. And I forgot to tell you about they upgraded me on the plane to first class. And I had the most amazing. I went fishing the next day. I caught the largest hammerhead shark that they'd ever seen. Everything was so wonderful. So the purpose of me telling you this story is for you to ask the question, who's crazy? Who's weird? The psychiatrist who works 30 years to go on a vacation that's from hell? Or the schizophrenic who has a wonderful vacation anytime he wants? As long as he can conceive of it, it's beautiful. Because he doesn't have to have any physical interaction. Who do we lock up? The people who are insane? Or the people that are doing the locking up, are they the ones that are insane?
Well, I can tell you that not all the nuts are in the nut house.
Are we referring to me?
No, not at all. You must feel guilty about something.
I actually gave up all my guilt for Lent, so we don't have to worry about me feeling guilty. What I'm saying to you, it's okay to consider me weird. Because I should be in an insane asylum according to the normal society. When I say to you I'm going to live more than 300 years, when I say to you that I go to Israel every morning to pray, am I insane? Or am I living the life that I wish to live? That's why I asked the question when you said, people are weird when you say the things that I teach you. They say you're weird, and they're absolutely correct. But does that mean it's wrong? Does that mean it's bad? Does that mean it's something you should be concerned about?
Absolutely not.
The only thing you need to be concerned about is you don't get so out of left field that they're going to lock you up. That you need to be concerned about. You always have to be aware that you live in two places at once. You live in a physical world, and all of the trimmings and trappings associated with the physical world. And you also live in the spiritual world in your mind. Anytime you choose, where do you wish to live? You have to live in both. Otherwise, if you're only living in your mind and your spiritual level, they're going to lock you up physically. So you have to live in both. But where would you rather live? On the vacation with the schizophrenic or the vacation with the psychiatrist?
On the vacation with the schizophrenic, because my brother was a schizophrenic.
And if I had used a different illness, would it have been made any difference in our discussion?
Probably not. My family's had them all.
You have to take each person on one by one. You know, you have to start where they are. It's just like teaching little kids. You know, you start where they are. If you all of a sudden say, oh, this world is an illusion. Well, yeah, you know what that means, but they don't. So you have to start with the language that they understand. And then gradually, but more than what you say is how you act. That's what they watch.
Correct.
Your actions, more than your words.
I have to go at this point. So classics at our next class is questions and answers. So please join us and bring your questions. And I'll teach you how to not be schizophrenic when you're schizophrenic.
Okay. Thank you. Shalom.
Shalom Gadol.
Shalom. Thank you.